What is up, everybody? Welcome back to another edition of The Closing Pitch. My name is Spiker Helms, and this is a show about people, culture, and how to create a winning lifestyle. I actually almost forgot the intro as I was doing that. I actually blanked when I was...
You've only did it 84 times now.
When you have two podcasts, it's kind of like you get to a point where it's like, is this The Closing Pitch or is this a Tiger interview series? It's getting to that point. Also, I'm kind of sleep deprived too, so it is what it is, right?
I saw an email come across at 5:30 from you this morning.
5:30, yeah.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. I was still sleeping.
There you go. Today, guys, we have an awesome episode. We have a man sitting across from me that I highly respect. Played against him and when he was a coach at Mizzou. His credentials are really good. Played at Missouri State, coached at Missouri State. Went to Mizzou, coached there for 20 years.
About 21.
21 years. First, when I heard of the news of you potentially wanting to come over to the club side, I was ecstatic. I was trying to keep my excitement at a very low level because I didn't want to have a lot of hope, and then everything just crushed. So, but I'm glad that you're sitting across from me right now. I'm excited for this conversation. Just because I view college baseball as being the insider. I also view professional baseball as being the insiders because everyone wants to try to get to that pinnacle. I know that when I was playing, that's where I wanted to go. I wanted to go to either Missouri State or Mizzou. So I'm really excited for this conversation. Give a little bit of brief intro. I don't
think who is this? I forgot his name.
Evan Pratt. Give us an intro, Evan. And I don't think I did it justice, but go ahead and give us an intro and let everyone know who you are.
Well, gotcha. I really appreciate it. Super excited to be here, and certainly appreciative of all you guys of bringing me on board and been around college baseball my entire life. Grew up here in St. Louis, played for Baldwin Legion back in the day, Lafayette High School. Coach Swift was one of my guys that I looked up to forever back in the the high school years, and certainly got a lot of friends in the area, and excited to be here, living here, and went to Missouri State, which was Southwest Missouri State back in the day, and played for 4 years down there for Coach Gotten, and then ended up getting a chance with the Detroit Tigers for 5 years in their minor league system. Went back to Missouri State for about 2.5 years as their volunteer coach. Had some really good success down there. It was fun. Some regionals, and then ended up going up to Columbia at Mizzou in the spring of 98, and was the assistant coach, director of operations there for a long time, like I said, about 21 years or so. And then coaching chains over there, as it happens in college baseball, really super excited to spend as many years there as I did. It's kind of an anomaly anymore in college athletics that you get to spend 20 plus years at one institution, and I was very thankful that I did there. Fumbled around for a little while, and then got a call from Coach Hendrickson at SLU, and went down there for 3 years, and now I'm here with the high school side. So super excited about spending a lot of time with the parents and the kids about the recruiting process and helping them along.
Just thinking about the names that you've seen in your career, Scherzer, Kinsler, Sean Markham. I mean, that list, and there's more.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah.
It's absolutely amazing to think about it. And when you look at players, what is it that you look for the most? Because, I mean, that's a long list.
And, oh, absolutely.
And yeah. When you see these players, do you notice like, hey, this guy can make Major League Baseball? Or is it kind of just like, I'm glad that we have this talented player?
It's more that you're glad you have the talented player. And obviously there's a lot of other coaches that go into it and you're recruiting the kids that were there, and Coach Jamison and Coach Vitello and Coach McCann and on and on and on. It was kind of a collective effort. But we were very fortunate to have a lot of really good players come through the system there, and there's a lot of really good players that did not make the big leagues that were just as good and just as talented and just as fun to be around. And the middle 2000s, whenever we were going pretty good there and making I think 7 or 8 straight regionals, was a lot of fun because it was a really tight-knit group. They really wanted to play for each other. I get a million stories about those guys just competing and getting after it. But you watch a guy in high school and you see a lot of things in him that you really want to see as far as being in your culture and your college team, as far as the winning part of it, the competition part of it, just carrying themselves the right way on the field. Not alone, you can see talent all day long. Anybody can walk up and, well, that guy hits it the farthest. He throws it the hardest. You know, he runs the fastest. That's kind of easy to see. But the other part of it is you know, talking to the high school coaches and figuring out, you know, which kids get it done off the field as far as the classroom. Mm-hmm. You know, how are they in their relationships with their teachers, with their friends, with their girlfriends? You know, all of that stuff plays a role in it. So you try to attract and try to, you know, get after those kids that are going to be not only successful on the field, but more importantly, successful off the field. Obviously, because not everybody's going to play baseball forever. They're going to have to jump in the real world at some point, and those are the kids you want.
Well, even the competitors that I mentioned, like Scherzer and Kinsler, like they were absolute just...
Savages,
yeah. Like Jedi, Knight, Black Ninjas, whatever you want to call them, and they would just go out there and just destroy people. Is that like a huge factor for you when you were recruiting? Like, I'm looking for the guy that's just going to go out there and...
Oh, yeah. It's kind of hard to see, but at the same time, it's kind of easy to see. Watching the teams play and trying to find those guys that's the challenge of the job and the fun part of the job.
Tanner Hawk
was really good.
He reminds me of just the competitive spirit that Scherzer has. When I would see him on TV, I was already out of baseball by then, but seeing him compete, it was like, whoa, this is like a spawn of Scherzer.
Yeah, and it was really kind of fun because you had guys like Aaron Crow, Rick Zagone, Kyle Gibson as well that went through there, and they kind of passed the torch each year. So they were catch partners when they were there, and the younger guys played with the older guys played with the younger guys, vice versa. And they kind of bled over, you know, through one another and learned from one another. It was really cool to watch those guys come through there, and one guy tried to up the next guy, and it was really cool to see those guys really. And Aaron Crow was probably the biggest competitor of all of them. I mean, Max was great, Kyle was great, Rick was great, they were awesome. But I mean, Aaron he got after it. I mean, he really, really got after it. It was, you know, one of those things where if you were on Tuesdays at practice and Max and Aaron were down there throwing their bullpens, if you didn't hear him cussing, it wasn't a good day. Literally, because they were trying to, you know, outdo each other, and, you know, and just it was even different times, but it was fun to listen to them just on a Tuesday when they're trying to get better.
That's how Voight was
down there.
It was Voight was like that,
and I can imagine. Yeah,
he's in the big leagues, and I'm sitting here across from you. So
exactly.
There's that. Maybe I should have been cussed a little bit more and got a little bit more mad when I lost.
Yeah. Was that something you recruited, or was that like obviously you look for it in recruiting? But was that like a key checkoff list that you recruited, or was that something that you guys felt like at Mizzou you instilled in that culture, or just like you said, passed down the torch from the ultra-competitive seniors?
Yeah, a little bit of both. I mean, you can recruit that. You can see that. But also, too, the culture that was there that Coach Jameson created. Tony Vitello, for sure, was a major part of that. Crazy Italian. It's just who he is. And obviously, he's doing it, you know,
he's
still today.
Right now, yeah.
But he was a major part of that. Coach McCann. I mean, all those guys kind of created that niche of pitching university type of thing during that time frame. And everybody just wanted to be better than the next. They just wanted to do it. And there was plenty of first-rounders in there, and obviously plenty of those guys that got to the big leagues. But there were also plenty of guys that just never played pro ball that were just as good competitive-wise.
Mm-hmm.
They just weren't as talented as those guys to throw 98 and pitch in the big leagues. But that's what made that team and that group during that era so successful, is that they wanted to be really, really good. And then the talent level varied, but the desire, the competitiveness, and all of that stuff was top-notch of anybody, for sure.
Well, just the names even on the coaching staff. I mean, obviously yourself, Jameson, but then Cohen, and then you have Vitello. And people that don't know who Cohen is, he's now the AD at Mississippi State. He also coached at Mississippi State, Kentucky. Has done really well. And then obviously Vitello is the hot name right now and taking Tennessee into a regional, and then getting a lot of notoriety on that in just the 3 short years, right?
I think about 3, because he was at TCU prior and then Arkansas. Well, TCU to Arkansas to Tennessee.
And the reason I'm going down this route is just the community and how you guys established that in that era. What was going on through your guys' head during that time frame when you guys had the players, but also you had the staff?
We were trying to win as much as we can. You know, another guy that's we haven't mentioned yet is Matt Hobbs, who's the pitching coach of Arkansas right now.
That's another one.
Yeah. You know, and Hobbsy was a pitcher for us at Mizzou, and then he's, you know, came back as a pitching coach, and you know, was West Coast guy that just has a passion for coaching, a passion for recruiting, and obviously he's got, you know, in charge of the number one pitching staff in the country right now, and he's doing awesome things as well too. So there's plenty of other guys that are mixed in there, but. But at that time, we were just, it's one of those things where it just kind of, every day you came into the office, you were wanting to do something great for the kids. And
did you realize what was happening at the time, or did it just feel like you guys were all on the same mission to do something bigger than who you were?
No, I think we realized what was going on, but nobody really wanted to acknowledge it. We were just going, and it was fun. I mean, it was great. It was just a blast to come in, and we were in the Big 12 at the time, which was a perfect conference for us at that point. With Texas, Oklahoma's, Oklahoma States, Nebraska's, and it was a
powerhouse conference.
It was really going good at that time. So it was fun, and we were having success. That year was 97, I think it was. We finished 2007. We finished second in the league or whatever it was. We hosted a regional, which had never been done in Columbia. We had a really good group that year, so it fell just a little bit short to Louisville, but.
Hate Louisville right now?
Yeah, it was.
Sorry, I was watching that on TV. I remember it like it was yesterday.
I mean, that was the first year for Coach McDonald at Louisville, and he walked into a great situation. They were a great team, and we were one slider away from probably getting beat twice on Monday. But that didn't quite turn out obviously the way we wanted to, because we were excited, because if it would have worked out, Oklahoma State had just beaten Arkansas at Arkansas at their regional. And Oklahoma State would have had to come to us for a super regional, and we beat Oklahoma State 2 out of 3 earlier that year. So we were feeling really, really, really good about the possibilities, of getting to Omaha. I mean, obviously it didn't work out, but take nothing away from that group and then that era. It was a blast to go in the office every day. Like I said, it was fun.
Who was really the catalyst of that staff? Like, who really pushed you guys forward and challenged you guys to actually get better?
I mean, Coach Jamison at the top for sure. He was the director of it. But mostly probably the crazy Italian Tony was probably the, you know, we'd have, you know, Saturday practices where he'd show up in a Bears jersey, you know, just having fun with the guys and competing. And he didn't take no for an answer. He wanted to win everything.
Bears in Missouri State or
Chicago Bears?
I was going to say. I was like, that might be that might cause some fighting.
No, it was certainly the Chicago Bears. Yeah. So, and he had his favorites, which was fun, and the kids fed off of that. And that was probably if you would point to one thing, is his exuberance and his energy and the way he did it. It was fun to be around, because those kids just fed off of it. And I don't know if anybody saw during the World Series a few years ago when the Nationals won it, you know, Tony was there with Max with 4 or 5 of the other players during that era. They all went down there and hung out with Max, and
that's awesome.
They were on the field after they won, and you know, just that tight-knit group, they're still together as far as, you know, being close and all that stuff. That's the fun part of the coaching end of it, is, you know, seeing those guys have those relationships later in life, and whether you're in the World Series or you're whatever job you're doing, you know, those guys are going to be friends for life.
What fascinates me about a college program is just, it's like a little small business, right? You have to figure out how to get the right pieces and get the right people in one area. And then also you have to have the staff to do that. Also, you have to have the administration to give you support. A lot of people don't think about that.
Yep.
Because then you have to have someone that does the baseball ops side, that does all the admin side. Then you have someone that does the development side. Then you have people that actually get people for campers to get into the door to actually help support the program. And it just builds on top of each other. What's it like to get from ground one where you have to go recruit that first player?
I mean, it's tough. It's really tough. I mean, we were there. I was there in 98. And we did basically, I remember we did a staff retreat one summer and just basically did a hard reset of everything of what are we going to do or where are we going to go? I remember we spent 2 or 3 days down at Lake of the Ozarks just getting just ourselves, our staff, and you know, asking and learning some tough things and hard questions of what are we going to do? And we really said, okay, we need to really get after it. We need to build from within. We need to build with the high school guys.
Mm-hmm.
And
because you have two routes. If people that don't know, you have two routes. You have high school and then you have junior college. And junior college is a double-edged sword.
Yep.
Where I could win now, but then I lose in 2 years, and then I haven't built up my freshman class, and I have to go back to junior college. So it's like it's a weird mix. But anyways, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, no. So Coach Jameson did an unbelievable job of basically resetting our whole staff of what our direction is and what are we going to do. And so we literally that next year, maybe in the following year, I can't really remember exactly the years, been a while, but we had three freshmen in the rotation, and we had a freshman catcher. And we built it from there. And those three guys were the most three competitive dudes on the mound that, you know, at that time were awesome. And they took their lumps, they got in the fire, and it moved it forward. And then I think 2003, we got Ian for the year, and that propelled us to the first regional. That was the first year, the first run of 7 or 8 in a row or whatever it was.
Was he a hired gun, basically?
Or
did he? Or did you get him for 3 years?
No, we had Ian for 1 year.
For 1 year. One so year, basically it was like a free agent sign. Yeah. We're going to trade and get one.
Well,
one
I mean, as the story goes, I mean, Mike Rooney, who was big in college baseball now, was at Arizona State at the time, called us and said, hey, we got this guy we're not going to use because Dustin Pedroia is our shortstop.
isn't that a great problem?
Yeah, so no doubt. Coach J jumped on a plane, went out there.
Surprised couldn't find second base for him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know. So he got on a plane, went out to Arizona. He's playing in the Phoenix League or was college, whatever it was. He said it's 1,000 degrees. And, you know, he called me in the middle of the game. He said, this is the best shortstop in our league right now. I said, I can remember telling him, I think if I remember correctly, I said, well, you don't leave there without getting him. You know, we need the guy. And then sure enough, it ends up happening. We get him for the year. And Ian was great. Obviously he was phenomenal, but he ends up breaking his foot as like the first or second weekend of the year. So we didn't have him for 3 or 4 or 5 weekends or whatever it was, which kind of people kind of forget about. And then he ends up having a good year, and you know, it's 15th or 16th, 17th round or wherever it was out of our place, and he signed and played. We were kind of hoping he would come back, but you can kind of tell at the time he was going to want to get going, and then you know the story goes on from there. But yeah, so we just had him for the 1 year, but he was really, really, really good for us to propel that gap and what we needed for that year for sure.
So you start with the battery.
Oh yeah. Started nuts and bolts. I mean, it's obviously baseball's up the middle with, you know, catcher, pitchers, second base, shortstop, center field. That's where you start with.
And then so you just build out from there.
Just kind of build out from there. And
so power's not really a thing that is of super importance. It's more of just the athleticism. You need to get the athletic guy.
Yeah, you get the athleticism. You get the right guys and the right fits in the middle. And then you kind of work yourself out from there. And there's not a lot of power anymore in college baseball overall anyway. With the way it's going now and the dumb down the bats and the balls.
Yeah, there's no Pete Incaviglia anymore.
There's just nobody.
What's his last name?
Incaviglia?
Yeah, you said it, right?
Yeah. So there's nobody hitting 50 home runs anymore. And in a good year, it's 10 to 15.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more getting the right people and the right fits and the right guys on the mound to give you a chance to win on the weekends and to kind of work from there.
How has the baseball community changed over the years? You've seen a lot of games, the 21 years at Mizzou, and obviously with SLU, and you are traveling all over the country, mostly the Midwest. But what has changed in the evolution of baseball?
The biggest change for me is the kids, it's the way they go about it and the way they do it and the direction of what they do. A lot of it has to do with, I think, the new age metrics, tools, numbers, all of that stuff that they get to chase anymore during the off seasons, which is awesome, which is great. But there's a lot of things that are lost in translation with those as well too. Because once you get them at the college level, you know, a lot of guys are worried about the launch angle or the, I got to throw 84, I got to throw 87, I got to throw this, I got to, you know, in 90, whatever.
Yeah.
And that's fine. That's great. It's awesome. But at the same time, when you get to a college, that job of that coaching staff is to win baseball games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do you win baseball games? Well, obviously it's not by throwing up whatever number. That's part of it. That's great. But also, too, there's a lot of things that are lost with the degeneration of kids these days. Mm-hmm. And it's just a lot of little things. You know, how do you back up a base as a pitcher? You know, how do you turn the double play as a middle infielder? How do you take routes in the outfield as a, you know, how do you take the extra base when the ball's in the dirt? You know, the biggest thing with pitchers is how do you hold runners? Pitchers don't know how to hold runners anymore.
No.
They really don't. They don't know how to do that. And then all of a sudden you get guys that are, you know, 1-5 to the plate, and you want to teach them a slide step, and they look at you like you're on Mars, and you're like, well, I'm going to lose my velocity if I do that. Well, everybody's going to steal every base, and the guy's going to be at third base. You throw one bad pitch, and it's a run for them.
The player that holds the Tiger stolen base record literally lived off of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I had him when he was a freshman. And I taught all my guys, like, guys, pitchers don't know how to hold on runners. Just figure out what their pace is and then just take the bases.
Yeah.
And literally he did that every single game. He was averaging, 2.5 steals a game?
Oh, at least, yeah. Well, I mean, it goes back to what we were talking about with Adam Jansen in our last podcast. What do kids associate the best player with now? It's not the kid who fields a 980 clip or that does all the little things right. It's the guy who hits the ball the furthest and throws the ball the hardest. That's all they equate as the best player on the field.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with, does that guy miss barrels as a pitcher? Does that guy have a high contact rate? Does he do all the little things right, back up bases? Does they don't equate that anymore.
Well,
it's kind of shifted.
To their defense, and I'm talking the kid, that's all they see on TV anymore.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
They see the SportsCenter highlight of the home runs, the strikeouts. And that's what I want to be. That's what they aspire to be. I'm sure there are, but sit down and watch a Major League Baseball game and try to dissect it as a player and watch the nuances of the game and try to learn those. The kids don't watch that. They don't do that. They're not going to sit there for 2.5 hours and do that. They just don't. And like I was telling, they don't, you know, if you drive around the neighborhoods anymore, there's nobody out there playing wiffle ball games or mm-hmm. kickball games or.
Well, they're socializing through Minecraft and all those video games.
Yeah, you're not getting to fight with your neighbor and trying to learn how to win. You know, you're not punching your neighbor in the nose because he cheated on you or something. Yeah. Anymore. That doesn't happen anymore. You know, that's how I grew up is, you know, playing whatever with your neighbor and you wanted to meet him at whatever. The game is in your front yard. That is, it's a different group and a different. College coaches have to learn how to coach that, though. That's a thing that.
It's an art of coaching.
You have to really, really work on, especially the last couple of years when I was down at SLU. We've had to work at how do we reach these kids mm-hmm. and have those kids be successful with the way they are these days. It just.
So is it technology? Is it communicating through technology?
A little bit. You have to over communicate with them for sure. You just have to.
Are you sending them texts through, instead of like. Talking to them, you send them through text.
Everything's a text, which is fine, which is great. But I have more face to face and talks, and I'd wait till you get to practice and talk about whatever. But you would also preview it with a quick text of, hey, let's go over this at practice today.
Mm.
You know, and okay, you get the smiley face, the thumbs up, or whatever, you know, which is awesome. But just that's how they communicate these days. So we had to adjust to that a little bit and try to reach them in different ways that they know how to be, you know, communicative. Because there's literally, you know, nobody face to face anymore in a general sense of, you know, how do you communicate with somebody? It's all. You're behind something. You're behind your phone. You're behind your computer with an email, a text, or whatever it is. Generally, you know, it's hard to, you know, it's simply going through a drive-thru and ordering food.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Kids don't know how to literally do that anymore. It's hard to do.
That blows my mind. I would never send an emoji to a college coach, ever. That blows my mind.
I guess that's the art of coaching and teaching is that you have to adapt to that.
Yeah. When you get to the college level and you kind of work with their level, you know, I spend all the emojis you want, all of the funny looking pictures to make them laugh. I mean,
Coach Pratt just sent me a poop emoji.
Something, yeah, just to make the conversation, just to get to them, really.
Yeah, I think I'm not a fan of like fighting against that. I think you've got to find a way to go with the flow, even though it's not what we grew up in and obviously generation. But again, it goes back to it's the art and the skill set of a coach or a teacher to figure out, okay, what's the actual communication tool that I have to use? Is it a story? Is it an emoji? I can't believe I just said that. Is it me going on Snapchat? One of the two. I mean, obviously we use Twitter a lot and using social media to communicate. And now we have the VIP section where we're trying to communicate through that way. So it's just different levels of communication. How has the parents changed over the years with communication? Obviously you're recruiting the player, but then you have to talk to the parent. How has that changed?
Yeah, a little bit. Even more, the parents have, I think, in a general sense, a little more higher expectation of their kids and what they expect and what they want to do, because they see, you know, because college baseball has boomed on TV and the exposure and the spotlight is like, it's major league-ish as far as the top end Power Five guys, because they're always on TV with the tournament starting and all that stuff. The fun part of the season is getting ready to start.
Would you say it's Christmas Day for college baseball?
Yeah, it's Christmas Day. Obviously, today it is
It's June 4th. You know, and we're recording this on a Friday, so the regionals are just now starting. Mm-hmm. It's a big celebration inside college baseball.
Absolutely. So everybody's, you know, getting to see the fun part of college baseball. Yep. So my kid can play there. My kid can do this. So I think there's a little bit more generally, a little bit more overhype for the parents on that end of it, just because they see, you know, everybody in the world these days are committing earlier and earlier and earlier, and everybody knows that this Johnny committed as a freshman to whatever school. Well,
I want to get down that route in the Tiger interview series.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I feel like that is just going to be an explosion of a conversation. Yeah. So if you're listening to this, we're going to record another podcast coming up, and we're actually going to go down specifically on the recruiting route. Right. This episode's all about just culture and how the landscape is. Yeah. So sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. So I think parents see that, and the kids see that, and the kids want to go, yeah, I want to do that as well, too.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the parents think that, well, my kid can do that. Well, why can't he do that? And some of the expectations and stuff. So the kids don't do their homework at the very beginning, and the parents don't do their homework and say, my kid is a junior college player. My kid's an NAIA type guy. My guy's a Division I type player. You know, then the expectations kind of get lost through the shuffle just a little bit. But for the most part, the parents are still pretty good. They're pretty grounded. But there are some, like I said, they'll kind of, your kid's not that.
Do you think labeling just hurts? Like they're labeling their kid before it actually happens?
Especially early on. And that freshman sophomore year when you see kids that are learning how to play and learning their bodies. It's hard, yes. And they do get labeled. But when those kids change at 16, 17 instead of 14, 15, it's a whole different ballgame. And you can dream on a kid that's 15, 14, whatever years old. But that kid's going to be totally different in 2 or 3 years. Mm-hmm. And that's what I tell a lot of the kids and all the kids that I've talked to is, you know, get in touch with a college. Have that college coach tell you, you know, I think you're going to be this. Don't let mommy and daddy tell you. Don't let your friends tell you. Don't walk down the halls and say, well, I'm going to be a Division I baseball player. Well, no. You know, get it from the professionals. Get it from the source. And let them say, hey, I think you'd be a best fit at this place. Because most college coaches are awesome with that. And if you bug them enough and say, hey, you know, I'm going to be playing a Division I Power 5 guy, I said, well, and you talk to 3 or 4 different coaches and they all tell you that you're a Division II player, well, you're probably a Division II player. So I think that's where kind of the mommies and daddies a little bit get mixed up with that. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
It's just who you are. There's nothing.
I think from a player standpoint, because I was one of those guys that kept everything close in. And I was like, I'm a D1 player. I never told anybody. I was just like, I'm a D1 player. And everyone around me was telling me I wasn't a D1 player. And then I started like, am I not a D1 player? I'm looking around. I'm like, well, I'm better than that guy. That guy's going to Division II. Well, I'm kind of good at it. He's going to Division I. And then I just got a chip on my shoulder. And I never really stated like, I'm going Division I. That's a make or break Division I. And I had to go the junior college route and figure out, okay, these guys got there their freshman year. How can I absolutely crush them when I get to 4-year university? Mm-hmm. And God bless him. One of my friends, Ryan Club, played for you.
Oh, yeah.
And that was, I don't know if he knows this, but that was my motivating factor. It was like, I wanted to go and beat
Mizzou. That guy.
I wanted to crush that guy. And I love him to death. I love his brother, just a great family. But like, that was my motivating factor. It was like, I wanted to go in there and just absolutely go crush people. But again, it's that labeling that gets people caught.
Well, I like to tell the kids, like I said, I like to tell the kids, shoot for the stars.
Yeah.
If you think you're a Division I player, go figure out if you are or you aren't. Go to a camp or talk to the coaches or talk to four or five different Division One coaches, send them their video, and make them tell you no or yes, whichever direction it goes. And I don't like the kids to label themselves because it's you're just like you said, your self-evaluation is a very difficult thing to do.
It is.
And let the professionals tell you. Let the people that call you on a consistent basis tell you. Mm-hmm. If they're continuing to call you, then you're probably at that level. Mm-hmm. If this level keeps continually call you, you're probably at that level. There's no real cut and dry yes or no answer because you know, you just like you can go to junior college and in 2 years you're a superstar or in 2 years you're an NAIA guy or whatever it is. But
I almost actually decided to go Division II. It was and it's funny, I had Wichita State, Missouri State, and UCM, and I didn't commit to Missouri State. I went to UCM I wanted to see it because Clint Culberson was my coach.
Oh, sure.
He always talked about UCM days. I'm like, man, that sounds like an awesome culture. I just want to be in that culture. I go down there. They almost convinced me to go to UCM. Sure. I was that close of saying, I'm going to go to Division II instead. Just because I wanted to win a national championship.
Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely.
And I was like, I was willing to say, I don't want to do Division I. I want to go win. But then obviously Coach Gutton he recruited a really, really well that year and ended up having a really good team. But it is funny how life can work, but keeping that close to your chest and saying I'm this guy, but not letting everyone know and not labeling yourself too early and being willing to adapt.
Yeah, the doors have to always be open all the time for all the kids, all the parents. You know, it could end up being, you know, you're a Division I guy, you could end up being you're a lower end Division III guy, who knows? But the doors always have to stay open for every option that comes about because it just takes one guy.
Yep.
It takes one coach to come to one of your games wherever and watch you and go, I like that dude. That dude would fit great with me.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be a division, like I said, Division I, II, III, whatever the level is. But that's the beauty of college baseball because somebody wants you to play for their team. And if you have a willingness to play college baseball, somebody's going to take you on their team, regardless of the level. And the bigger thing that I tell kids is you've got to enjoy your college experience.
That's a huge
one. Wherever you go to school, you have got to enjoy your college experience. You don't want to go to wherever and play one inning and have one at bat. You'll be miserable. You're part of the team, but you're miserable. That's no good for anybody. Go wherever and just enjoy it and have fun and compete for a job.
That experience is like so important because, I mean, we talk about it all the time. Like, What's our best experience in college? Mine was junior college. What was yours?
Yeah, I mean, I would say JUCO baseball was probably a little bit better.
I mean, just fun. Yeah. Just really,
little,
really fun.
It's like, a different thing. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to explain what the JUCO route is, but it's different.
But it doesn't say that Missouri State or S&T was a bad fit.
No,
it was
great. It was just
junior
different.
College. Like, you're literally in a hotel room.
It's the Wild Wild West. There's more stories that came out of JUCO baseball.
And you guys know, too, you don't remember if you hit 350
no.
or you were 8-2. You remember the stories in the hotels. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You remember the bus rides.
Yep.
It's the same way when I was in pro ball. I don't remember how good I did, but I remember eating lunch with Alan Trammell and Lou Whitaker and Kirk Gibson one day in spring training. I remember that. To like, it's awesome.
Yeah.
I don't remember any of the other stuff. Yeah. That's the other stuff. That stuff for me is fun to remember.
Well, we were sharing stories about Missouri State yesterday. And again, it goes back to that. Like the first time that I got to a Missouri State like travel trip, I think I told you this story where it's me and my buddy Brock. And like we're in junior college, you try to figure out, okay, we need to get three to a room. If we can get two, we win.
Right.
So we're trying to like gang up like, all right, we're not going to ask that guy. We're not going to ask that guy. That guy, we need to have him because he's a lot smaller.
Yeah.
And so, like, we're just picking out on the bus on Missouri State. And, like, we have this whole plan set up. And then we roll up to a Hilton. I'm like, what? We're at a Hilton? Junior college baseball, you say it like a Super 8.
Yeah, quality in was real clutch. Real good. Yeah.
That breakfast was pretty good. That kind of breakfast. And then if you won, you got to go to the buffet.
Yeah. If you lost, pizza in the room.
Yeah,
maybe.
Pizza in the room. Maybe. But anyways, we get to the hotel room and everyone's passing out keys and me and Brock are like staying back, like hoping that we'd be the last ones because then we'd get two to a room. And then he goes, Brock, Spiker, here's your key. And then we're like looking at each other like, man, I feel bad. Like we're the first dudes here. It's junior college. Like there's been guys that have been here since freshman year and like, we didn't know that there was only two to a room. And so Brock like raises his hand. He's like, Lump, we only got two to a room. Everyone just like literally pen drop, everyone just stares at us, like straight just stares at us. And we're looking at her like, well, did we just say something wrong? And then Lump, and then everyone looks at Lump. Lump goes, welcome to the show, boys.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Good surprises.
Yes, very good surprises. How have coaches changed just from a recruiting end? And what type of false narratives do players and parents have on college coaches in the upper levels?
Well, I think a lot of times that they the parents and the coaches think that they're kind of unreachable, untouchable, unapproachable at times. And a lot of it sometimes during the tournaments has to do with the rules, because obviously you can't, you know, talk to recruitable kids and or parents during the tournaments. But I think that's the thing with me, is sometimes the parents are kind of dancing around you and they want to talk to you, but they can't. And but I think that's the biggest thing. I think sometimes that they're unapproachable. But as far as the coaching staff's part of it is, there's more of an emphasis on winning these days. Mm-hmm. There's more of an emphasis on getting the right kids to fit your team that allow you to win. And the TV exposure, the money that's going around, the way that the tournament's set up these days, the way that the conference tournaments are set up these days, a lot more middle major school, not necessarily just the Power Fives, are putting more of an emphasis on winning, which is investing in facilities, investing mm-hmm. in coaches' salaries, investing in scholarships, that type of stuff. Excuse me. So I think there's more of an awareness to be at the top of the Missouri Valley every year, atop of the Ohio Valley Conference. Not necessarily the SEC or the Big 12 or Big 10 or any of that stuff, because they're always going to be able to, you know, try to win at all costs, mm-hmm. yeah. types of stuff. But it's trickled down to a lot of people. So the head coaches, the assistant coaches are more of grinders, really, really doing overwork, trying to find the right fits, the right guys. So the coaching staffs are there's a little bit more transition in staffs these days. You know, so it's a little bit more kind of shifting towards the football side, not getting to the football side, because football, those guys move every 2 years for some reason. But it's kind of shifting in that direction, where guys are trying to find the best fit. They're trying to find the best angles. There still are a number of, you know, coaches that have been at schools for 20 plus years, which is awesome. And those guys are, you know, the mainstays of college baseball anymore. Because it just doesn't happen in college athletics, mm-hmm. or most college sports. There's just not a lot of.
It's becoming more like professional sports.
Yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. you're 4 or 5 years here, and then you go 4 or 5 years there, you know. And there's still that, you know, that 25 to 30 year guy at mm-hmm. school, whatever, that's still doing it, mm-hmm. And adjusting to with whatever. But that guy has really good assistant coaches.
Yep.
That are going to get after it on the road and get after it on talking to the kids and finding the right players that fit. That particular head coach.
Is the pressure getting more on the college baseball coach? Like a pressure to win from an admin side?
It depends on what the admins, you know, put into the program. So like I said, if you invest in, here's a $4 million stadium, then yes, we expect some wins.
You got to win.
I mean, Kentucky just put, what, $60 million in their stadium?
Yeah, it's something like that. Enormous number.
I mean that's
some ridiculous.
To me, doesn't that scream? You know, and this is a whole different conversation. But it's some of those schools. It's turning into revenue.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, Mississippi State, Mississippi, all those SEC schools that obviously, you know, lead in attendance every year. That's always been like that with those guys.
Well, LSU's, their crowds are just
it's
crazy.
Fun. It's major league atmosphere, and yep. they promote and market, and it is a moneymaker for those guys. And obviously, college baseball is the second biggest, you know, revenue behind basketball tournament. You know, it's not, football is a totally different story.
World, yeah.
Different, obviously. But yes, baseball is way up there anymore, and there's an edge to it. And if an administrator is going to give somebody X amount of thousands of dollars to mm-hmm. for a salary, and hey, here's a $5 million stadium that's got all these cool stuff, you know, we're going to expect you to be at the top of the conference then every 2 or 3 years.
So with that being said, obviously there's a certain level of expectation of winning now that's been elevated with college coaches. How do you find that player? Because we've talked about this, you know, over the last couple of days. How do you find that player who just knows how to win? Because that's kind of like what we've talked about. It's a lost art these days with everybody worrying about the numbers and the metrics. How do you find the player that just hates to lose more than anyone else?
That's where you do the homework watching your games, but you also do the homework talking to the coaches, talking to their high school. I've gotten into far as deep into talking to their high school English teachers. how is this kid in That's class? Awesome. You know, how, talking to their guidance counselor, how does he work with you when you're trying to get the transcripts to school A, B, and C?
So you actually go, you deep dive.
As much as we can. I mean, literally anymore these days, because you really kind of have to. You know, because I want to know, you know, if they've got great parents, they've got good girlfriends, they got good friends. You know, obviously we do a literally do a criminal background check. Have you been arrested? How many traffic tickets do you have? You know, how many parking tickets on you know, literally, we try to find out as much as possible just to be able to say, okay, head coach A, this guy I think is going to be a good fit for us.
Yep.
This guy's not because he's done A, B, and C or whatever. You know, you find out a lot of stuff from a lot of different fingers of that guy's in Twitter. You look on that guy's Twitter. What does he post? You know, every we see a guy, my first thing is to go right to the Twitter. Does he post about hanging out with his buddies fishing and doing whatever, or is he like running around town spinning his tires on the street making black mark? What is he doing?
Yeah, are there any, like, obviously we know the real red flags on social media. Are there any like unknown red flags that you guys see that you guys are like, whoa, stick away?
It kind of depends. I mean, there's some things that are pretty blatant like, oh boy, you know, this guy, what's he doing? You know, and you I literally call the guy. I was like, dude, what are you doing? What is this?
What gets you excited? Like when you see like a social media post and you're like, man, I absolutely love this kid. Like he just has a great attitude and great personality.
If this guy's engaged in the Twitter part of it, and he's also posting stuff about other kids competing, other players getting after it, whether it's a hockey player smoking a guy into the boards, or literally, I've seen plenty of guys, you know, take Max Scherzer, you know, and he's walking around the mound, cussing and hair, kicking and doing whatever he's doing, and like, this is the best thing I've ever seen. You know, that's the type of kid, like, man, he wants to be like Max. He wants to be like those guys that are getting after it.
That's cool.
And a lot of people might think that, like, that's a red flag. That's not a red flag. Like, I want a guy that just absolutely goes out there and just crushes people. I want him to compete.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Whether it's a football thing or a hockey thing or a curling thing, whatever. I mean, this guy gets after it, you know, whatever. It's, you know, I've seen one. I remember the one dude that is really got after it, one kid I really liked. He put a post on there about a kid that in the spelling bee, the little – sixth grade spelling bee. The guy spelled the word right and celebrated, and he was like, I love this kid. He spelled this crazy word right. You know, he's like, he was so excited he spelled the word right, you know, and he put that on there. And I'm like, yes, this kid is like really getting into it, like, because he just like people about the competition.
That's what I'm saying.
Whatever
is like,
it is.
I feel like social media is always a winning scenario if you are just yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Because I'm going to lean more towards people are going to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. And if you're not doing the right thing, then you should pay for it. Like it helps out the college coaches. Like I feel like social media is just like a breath of fresh air for the college coaches. Cause like, yeah, that guy would have not been a great choice for us.
Mm-hmm. You know, another little thing is literally what is your email address?
Ooh, yep.
Kitty, kitty, lick, lick, 2534.
Yeah. I mean, I don't need that guy. I'm like, come on. Give me like,
how did that come to your mind first?
Was that your old one? You remember it so well?
As much as you guys don't know.
What's your first impression to a college coach? And you got this crazy email and I'm looking, come on now.
That's why I didn't go D1 for the first right out of junior college or out of high school. What makes a player fun to watch?
Just the way they get after it. I like after the first inning, if he's got mud and dirt all over him, I'm all in.
Really?
Just because he's getting after it. I mean, not the fake dive and the just get dirty to get dirty, but you can tell that kid is really, really engaged. And watch one at bat, and he's just a tough out. And obviously, you're going to make most of the time you're going to make outs in this game. But he battles, and you, whether it's a 3-pitch out or a 10-pitch at bat or whatever it is, if you can tell the guys that have plans and has an idea and has approach, instead of the guy that just goes up there and hacks and swings, or the guy that just wants to get up there and just rare and just throw it as hard as he can, that guy is usually all around the zone. But if you got a guy up there just trying, the catcher sets up and he hits the glove every time, wherever the glove is at, then that gets me excited. You know that? That dude right there. Whether it's 82 or 89 or 91, I don't care. If he hits the mitt, or if the guy has a great plan and he knows that he's going to get a 3-2 or a 3-2 slider and he fouls it off, now he gets the fastball 3-2 and gets it and hits it well. that's the guy that you get excited about. I get excited about the guy that goes first to third on a ground ball that's just past the second baseman. Yep. He's trucking to third base every single time.
That's one of my favorite plays.
It's just awesome. I love the second baseman that goes behind first base every time on a ground ball to short. That gets me fired up. Yeah. Just a little stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's like that guy knows what he's doing, because that one play in a million that happens in your entire career, the shortstop throws it behind the first baseman, the second baseman's back there and throws home and gets the guy out at home in the state championship game, you win the game. That changes everything. That changes your whole entire existence of baseball. If you're not backing it up or going over there, you know, I love the guys, the middle guys that back up the throw from the catcher every pitch. And when do you see that anymore? Nobody ever does that. They just take that one step and go, oh, okay.
Peek in, yeah.
You know, you never have the guy that takes the two or three genuine steps, because you never know when that's going to happen. We won a game at Texas that year, one year. I can't remember what year it was. The All-American, all-everything catcher for Texas threw it past the pitcher, and our guy at third base was alert, went in and scored, and we won. That was the go-ahead run in one of the games.
Wow.
Late in the game. At Texas, that happened. So just being aware of, you know, situations like that, that obviously fired. I'll never forget that play. At Texas, the guy scores on a bad throw from the catcher back to the pitcher, puts us up one, and we win the game. Mm-hmm. We get three outs the next inning. It's like, how does that happen at Texas?
Would not have been in that locker room with Augie after
game.
Nah, maybe that was the video.
That went viral.
Yeah, no. He was there at that time. But then it just happens. Yeah. The one time it happens in a million, you have to be ready for it, whatever it is.
So when you're out recruiting them, like obviously you go to a game, you're there for the one guy you're watching, right? How often do you pay attention to the dugout?
All the time. Oh, I'm that guy that didn't like to wear the school colors that I was coaching at. I wanted to hide. I wanted to blend in. I wanted to know that, you know, nobody knew who I was or what I was doing. Because when you show up in your stuff and you're billboarding and, you know, oh, he's there, I'm going to put on my best show. I want the genuine effort. I'm going to talk to the kid afterwards and, hey, I was here watching you. I don't want him to know I'm there. I want the real true evaluation of the kid. So I'll hang around the dugout. I'll literally seek out his parents and sit by his parents and find out how they interact with all the other parents. Are these parents going to be easy to deal with if this kid comes to my school? Or is the parent always, oh, come on, what are you doing? You know, and you can literally tell if they would may be a problem later down the line. That's a big factor.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's really bad to say, but I want the parent evaluation too. So I try to figure out as much as that. You know, I peek in the dugouts and, you know, is he giving everybody high fives, or is somebody trying to give him a high five and he doesn't? Or is he's that mean, you know, don't talk to me because I just made an out guy. You know, I don't need that. You know, just, okay, yeah, you're going to make an out all the time. You know, give somebody a fist bump, or somebody, if somebody else makes an out, is this guy trying to help out and pick up his teammates? Mm-hmm. You know, that type of little interaction stuff. Is he the guy that runs out on the field that brings out the three pairs of gloves and hats to bring him out to the field for the infield? Is he that guy, you know, in between innings? So the guy that just made it out that's running at second and third doesn't have to run all the way into the dugout, put the helmet down, and run all the way back out to the field. Is this guy bringing that stuff out to those guys? You know, is he a servant type of player? That's the dude that you're after. That's the stuff that I like to see. You're like, yeah, that's the guy. That's freaking awesome. He's doing that for his other teammates.
The question I want to ask you is for our coaches, because I think starting at a very early age and getting the team chemistry going, I think that's huge. When you go, what attracts you as a college coach? And you're like, man, I just love seeing that team play, minus the talent. Like, that, obviously, you have to have good players because that's why you'd be there. But minus the talent, what gets you like, oh, I have to see this team because I just love how they play the game? What are the characteristics of those teams?
That 3 seconds, 4 seconds, 5 seconds of a play, those kids are engaged. They're dialed in. They're doing everything they can for that snapshot of a play. Whether it's a ground ball out or it's a fly ball out or it's a strikeout, those kids are engaged. And those are the teams that I love to watch play. Like I said, those guys, to me, are gonna be rewarded for the way they play the game. Because that one instance that the ball's overthrown here, they're going to be there to pick up the overthrow. The one pitch that the catcher doesn't, you know, block, that's an 0-2 pitch, he tries to swipe it with his hand and misses it. Nah, I don't need that guy, because I want the guy that's going to block the ball with two strikes. And the pitcher knows that if I throw a breaking ball in the dirt, my catcher's going to block it every time. You can do whatever you want outside those 4, 5, 6 seconds of that play. I mean, you can be looking all around and messing around with your buddies and cutting up and doing whatever. But when it's go time for those 200 and whatever pitches during a game, and those guys are dialed in and they look like they're focused and they want to get an out and they want to get a hit and they want to have a productive at bat, those are the guys you really want. The guys that are really, really engaged. That's easy to see because you can tell that the guys that are, you know, especially for an infielder, it's very difficult throughout an entire game, as you know, to sit there and get a hop step for 250 times and to get an approach because you may get one ground ball.
It's so hard.
One ground ball in 3 hours. But that one ground ball you have to catch might be the toughest ground ball you've ever had, and you have to make that play. And obviously that's the beauty of this game. But you see guys that kind of get laxed in that, and you just focus on the infielders, or the outfielders, because you're looking at the same thing. If those guys aren't hop-stepping or pre-stepping or getting prepared for that pitch, they're going to be flat-footed. They're going to be on their heels, and they're not going to make the play. So those are the guys that I like watching. I'll leave the pitcher and catcher and the batter alone, and I'll just focus on what's going on out here. Or I'll move down the line so I can't see the pitcher or the catcher or the hitter. I want to focus on, if I'm recruiting the shortstop or the second baseman or third baseman, just give me an angle at those guys. How do you approach every pitch? Mm-hmm. And it's in the seventh game of an 11-1 game. Are you just standing there flat-footed, or are you still engaged? You know, that 11-1 screaming ground ball that's right past you may open the floodgates for a rally for the other team. Who knows? But those are the guys that I like watching, those teams that are really doing little things to be productive, to win baseball games. Those are the guys I love to watch play.
One of my favorite stories, because you just said it, like in that 11-1 route, one of our alumni, he's at Central Missouri, he's set a ton of records, but I don't think he would have ever ended up there because he didn't particularly have great games when they came to recruit him. And we were losing down in Joplin big in one of those tournaments. And we were down like 10-2 last inning, and he hits a dribbler to third and gets down the line in 3-6. And I'll never forget, the coach looked at me and did that, and he goes, "That's all I need to know. I've seen him swing. I've seen him do this. I love him, but that's all I need to know." Yep. And I don't know if he goes there without that. Those are the little things you're talking about.
You never know, as a player especially, you never know who's watching you. You just never know. You never know if that one guy that goes to Joplin, and he's been at 4 other games, and he's going to your 5 o'clock game, and he gets there at 6:30 for the last 2 innings, and you don't see him come in, and he comes and watch your last at bat because this coach wanted to see you hit. What's it going to be? You may get that one opportunity in recruiting. That may be the one opportunity that the guy gets to see you play because he's from a school wherever, has been recruiting you from wherever, and it just so happens that that's how it is. But what do you do in that instance? Whether you make an out or a hit or whatever it is, it's obviously the way you do it. It's not the result. But if you do it the correct way, you get the 3-6, and that's what I want. That's the guy I want. And maybe that one opportunity. It really is.
I forgot who said this at one of our college coaches' nights. It might have been Vitello or Munns. But he says, "I really love watching week 7 or week 6 of
the summer schedule
because that's going to tell me everything."
Absolutely.
Which is, that's where you make your money. Like, that's literally where you make your money. Like, yeah, you're going to get that good look at week 1. You're going to get that good look at week 2. And then he's going to come probably around week 6, week 7. How's that guy doing? Because, again, the ending part of the year, because summer baseball is a lot harder than the spring side just because you're dealing with all that heat. And obviously, we're playing on turf. And you're baking out in the sun. But what do you like on a 3 o'clock game? Like, 3 o'clock games suck. Mm-hmm. Like, they just suck. But how are you handling that 3 o'clock game?
It's for a college coach, you're comparing that to your 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th week of the season. Mm-hmm. And you're dog tired. You've traveled all over the country. You've gotten up on an 8 o'clock flight or a 6 a.m. bus ride for 10 hours somewhere. Mm-hmm. How are you going to handle that with all of the academics added on to it of college academics? You got a test on Monday and you got your last series against the number one team in the conference in week 14. You know, you got a final coming up or whatever it is. You know, how are you going to handle all that stuff? Mm-hmm. It's the same, you know, equate the same way. You get the week 6, 7, whatever in the summer, and you're dead dog tired because you've been doing it all summer. Well, how are you going to do when, you know, this guy comes in to watch you play and you want to go to this guy's school? You know, how are you going to do it? You know, do you fold? Do you get after it? And obviously the guys that get after are the ones you want.
Mm-hmm. this conversation is really heading down the recruiting route, and I want to save it for the Tiger Tiger interview series. On this podcast, I feel like I have so many podcasts, but on this podcast, we have a closing pitch. So it's like a 10-second last remarks from the conversation that we had. And then we'll end it off there. And then we'll restart on the Tiger interview series, where I want to go real deep dive into the practicality, strategies, tactics. Also, I want to challenge our thesis from last May on social media and recruiting. So closing pitches, who wants to go first, Dave?
I'll go. I think the thing, because this is a show about culture, so I'm going to go down that route with my closing pitch and the players side of this. There's so many things that non-skill relevant that matter in how you go about your business, and just like Evan said, the little details about how you are as a teammate and how you run on and off the field. I loved how you talked about even the little thing of bringing out three gloves to the field that were sitting right there, and you're going to do that every inning. You're going to be that guy. You have no idea how much that matters. It probably, in the grand scheme of things, matters, in my opinion, just as much as how your swing looks at times. And it's those things that are so forgotten these days. So I hope that a player and a coach who's listening to this really took those out of this conversation and can implement that in their day-to-day.
Absolutely. I think bigger picture, not necessarily for the kids, but for the coaches. And it's harder to teach all this stuff anymore these days, because a lot of literally coaches, I don't think, know mm-hmm. about all of that stuff. Because a lot of the coaches anymore in the summer ball stuff are guys that are just out of college or younger mm-hmm. And may not have had that. A lot of guys have. They may not have had it. But I think a lot of that stuff, a lot of the stuff we talked about on the coaching side of it, for sure, they can implement into their teams. And it's all a bunch of little stuff. It's all a bunch of simple stuff, too. But it means, like you said, it means a ton. It means a lot. And bottom line, if kids want to play in college baseball, they can play wherever they want to play. There's a level for them to play. But they have to work at it and get there. But yeah, it's awesome.
Two things that I got from you, which was communication, being willing to adapt and communicate to the style of the player, even though that you might not like it, and send those poop emojis.
That's right.
Second thing is the ability to have leadership and have that culture where coaches are able to get players to be focused in every single pitch. It sounds easy, but it's extremely hard to do. And it takes a lot of energy from the coach to actually produce that and get that out there. And it only benefits the player, because the player, you're going to have a couple players that are going to, like 10%ers, that are going to be just locked in every single pitch. But nowadays, with social media, people being on Minecraft, text messages, the kids' attention spans are just, it's just not there. Not to the point where it was 10 years ago or even 20 years ago. So just being able to teach them the right way of like, hey, focus in on the details, second baseman, backup, center fielder, what are you doing? Everyone has a spot at every single play. So again, extremely hard to do, but again, really good advice. Guys, this is this episode of The Closing Pitch. I'm excited that Evan Pratt is with us and as a Tiger member now. If you have any questions, go ahead and send me an email, spiker@rawlingstigers.com, or any comments. We love getting feedback. Dave, you want him to contact your Twitter, or do you want him to contact your email?
Email, dburkby@rawlingstigers.com.
Thanks, guys, and we'll catch you in the next episode.
Thanks, guys.